and Chris, and this is my Writing Table podcast, where we talk to authors and other creatives about the writing world and what it takes to create the books that we love to read. Ready? Pull up a chair and let's begin. Lynn Galodner is the author of 9 books, 2 poetry collections, 6 nonfiction books, and a novel, and thousands of articles. She's also a marketing entrepreneur, writing coach, and host of the Make Meaning podcast, where she interviews authors and people in publishing. After working as a journalist in New York and Washington, D.C., Lynn returned to her native Detroit to pursue a freelance writing career and teach writing. Her creative nonfiction writing has appeared in The Great Lakes Review, Savior, The Chicago Tribune, Better Homes and Gardens, Midwest Living, The Detroit Free Press, and The Jewish Literary Journal, among others. A former Fulbright specialist, Lynn graduated from the University of Michigan and is the mother of 4 young adults and lives in Huntington Woods, Michigan. Her debut novel is Woman of Valor. Welcome, Lynn.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
Before we get into your debut novel, I want to talk to you about that, but I'd also like to hear about the podcast you began to honor your father.
Yeah. So I started the Make Meaning podcast in 2018. So, wow, 6 years ago, which is crazy. My dad had been diagnosed a year earlier with a fatal leukemia, and we didn't know if he'd make his 80th birthday. He'd always been super healthy. My family, thankfully, doesn't have like a health history that's concerning. So it was really a shock. And he and I were super close. And I thought, you know, I really want to capture some of his stories and just, you know, start with him. And the idea behind the podcast was to really interview people who are inspiring and talk about how they find meaning and purpose and work and in life. So the very first episode aired on his 80th birthday. Mm-hmm. And he was still with us. We didn't lose him for, I think, another year and a half. I mean, we had 2 years after the diagnosis, which was a lot longer than we expected. Yeah. So we all listened to it. We were together on vacation with all the grandchildren and all weeping as we're hearing this interview. And I haven't brought myself to listen to it since he passed. But on the 1 year anniversary of the podcast, and he was still doing well, and the treatments were working at that time, he came on and he was my guest for the 1 year anniversary. Oh, and that it was really cool. And then we lost him about 6 months later. And so I have 2 episodes with him, and the podcast has morphed as my career has evolved. So I was a journalist for a big chunk of my career, and then I started a marketing company, and that's been a big chunk. And so I started the podcast thinking maybe it'll be a marketing tool. Maybe I'll get clients that way, or who knows, as I'm interested in interviewing people and hearing their great stories. And then about 5 years ago, when I decided to pivot to really focusing on writing full time and teaching writing, I pivoted the podcast. And I said, well, I'm going to interview authors and people in publishing and hear their stories, learn how they do it. It's amazing. I get so many requests for people to be guests on the podcast. I'm on a little hiatus right now because I've had some issues with my voice. And so I'm trying to rest it and do some vocal therapy before I go back. So what I've been doing, because I had a bunch of guests booked, I didn't want to delay it even further. So I'm featuring them in my Substack newsletter, and hopefully I can interview them on the podcast at some point. But in the meantime, they get that exposure, which is cool.
Sounds like a cool podcast. I think we can all learn from one another. I think that's so important. Writing, you know, yeah, you can go and get an MFA, but if you don't do that, you really are sometimes feel like you're off on an island by yourself. And so podcasts are one way for us to connect. I was just talking to Nick Petrie, suspense writer, and he was saying that, you know, it's so nice to talk to other writers because you feel like, okay, we're all kind of going through the same things. We handle them differently. And some of us have better tools than others. And so it's nice that we can share those things.
So, absolutely. And it's so interesting. Every writer that I interview, I'm sure it's the same for you. I'm fascinated by how they came to writing, how they wrote a book, how their publishing journey went. Like, just so many interesting questions. And I feel like I'm constantly learning and gaining tools and inspiration from all the other writers. And so it's like a selfish pursuit because I just soak it in. But I'd love to give other writers a platform because we all need to help each other, you know?
Amen. You know, I know you know, Kristen Higgins warned me when I started this. She's like, it's going to take a lot more time than you think it is. Yeah, it takes a lot of time. And so there's times you go, you're like, oh, I have an interview tomorrow. Oh, I really need to be writing. Yeah. And yet, you know, walk out of my office after an interview and go, wow, that was so interesting. I learned so much.
Yeah.
So it's
worth amazing.
It.
I will tell you, I don't know about you, but when I first started, I had a podcast producer. I had somebody working for me who did a lot of the research and the content and whatever. And then when COVID happened, I had to decide, am I stalling the podcast? Am I doing it myself? So I bought the equipment and I started recording from home and I started editing myself and I love it. I like love every step of the process, but I gave myself so much more work because, you know, before I was outsourcing, and of course I was paying for that. Yeah. So I saved all this money, but I added so much work to my schedule. It is a lot, but I think it's a labor of love. I love listening to it again and picking up on those little nuggets that I didn't catch when I was doing the interview. And it's a really fun pursuit. And I love that anybody can do it. And hopefully they're putting quality content out there.
It's so easy as a writer to be disillusioned and disappointed in yourself. You're writing something that doesn't exist, you know, for everyone else. I was talking with Nick, a physical artist, a painter has paint and things. Yeah. We're just coming up with this from nowhere, you know, is what it looks like. And so it's nice to have other people who get that, like, you're not alone in this. So you'd worked as a journalist. You're still working as a journalist. You're still putting out articles, but you have created a novel called Women of Valor. What's that all about?
So Woman of Valor is about a young woman who chooses to become Orthodox in Judaism. She didn't grow up that way. And it really transforms her life. And she's really happy. She's married to a great guy. She has three kids. And then all these things fall apart. So she finds out that her son has been abused at school, physically abused. She's devastated. And so is her husband. And they're very close, but they respond in different ways. They want to take different actions. This causes a rift between them. And right around that time, her ex-boyfriend from college who broke her heart finds her online and says, I never should have left you. And so it's really, what is she going to do? You know, and how is she going to resolve this? Is she going to stay in this community she's been in for a decade that she chose, that she totally changed her life for? Or is she not? And what does she decide? So it came out last September. Everybody who reads it loves it, which makes me feel really good. And I'm a marketing expert, but I'm still really learning how to market my own book, you know, which is a daily task, I guess. I've been on book tour in a few places. I'm still going to do more. And so the response is really great. My next novel comes out in August. And it's not related to Woman of Valor. It's called Cave of Secrets. And it's a much bigger project. There's four main characters. It takes place in Scotland and in Michigan. There's issues of Jewish identity. They're not Orthodox, but there's also anti-Semitism, homophobia, a little bit of magical realism. It's like a whole big story. And I'm really in love with it. And that's just in the final stages of preparation in terms of with the cover design and all that stuff right now. And I just started planning out the next novel, which will be a book two in the Woman of Valor series. And it's focusing on Sally's best friend, Batya, and her journey. So yes, my goal is a book a year for the rest of my life. And I'm on track to do it. So let's see if I can pull it off.
I'd heard that you began writing Women of Valor about a decade ago. So what was different about what you started to write and what you finally produced?
That's a really great question. I am Jewish, very proudly Jewish, but I grew up very secular, you know, like Jewishly cultural, and we did holidays, but it was just really like a part of me. In my 20s, my late 20s, I became Orthodox. And so that is similar to Sally's journey in the book, but she's not me. It's not autobiographical. And I was Orthodox for a decade. My ex-husband still is. That's my first husband and the father of my children. There were things I loved about it, but there were things that just didn't resonate, especially with my more feminist tendencies and stuff. So I did leave it. And I left that when I left that marriage in 2008. So I started writing this book in 2011 and I did about 60 pages and the character was very whiny. She was not happy with her life. She was complaining and she hated being Orthodox. And I think it was like residual in me. And I just got annoyed with her. I was like, oh, this is like, who wants to hear this? You know? So I dropped it and I'm not going to deal with it. And I do have to tell you, Chris, I've been trying to write fiction for 25 years because I wrote my very first novel in either 1999 or 2000. And it's in a drawer. It's probably always going to stay there. But like, I've wanted to do this for a long time. And before Woman of Valor, I wrote 8 other books, poetry and nonfiction, but those were easier because either poems are short and contained or nonfiction. I was doing the research and reporting and interviewing, and so I had all the material. So I feel like I needed to mature in my writing and as a person to really write fiction well. So when I started in 2011, I was getting better, but I didn't have the patience to really stick with it because, you know, it takes a long time to get through at least a draft of a book, and then you have to revise and revise and revise. So I did 60 pages. I was annoyed with the character. I just put it away. So in 2021, when I said, okay, I'm ready and this is what I really want to do, and I started thinking about what book do I want to write? And I went back to those 60 pages and I said, I think I can work with this, but it's got to totally change. I don't want her complaining. There are enough books in the world about people who hate religion or who leave religion. And I just don't need to add to that, you know? So I deliberately committed to portraying her as somebody who loves her life and her choice. And she loves being religious because I wanted to turn the stereotype on its ear. And though, even though she has challenges, she still wants to keep it because it really resonates with her. So that was the kernel that was there. And I had to then start over.
But, you know, it's interesting in learning to write. One of the things we have to do is learn to show characters warts and all, but also not just warts, you know, all the different facets. And I think good writers learn to put it on the page where the worst mm-hmm. characters have good sides. That's a lesson we all have to learn, is how to show all the different sides, kind of turn that character inside out and show yes. everything. And so it sounds yeah. like that's what you did.
Yeah. I mean, there are times Sally does some things in this book that you probably will not approve of or like very much. And yet I think that she's enough of a likable character that you're like, well, I'm going to give her a little bit of leeway, you know? And even the ex-boyfriend, who kind of becomes a little bit of a stalker, there's a bad side to him, but there are redeeming qualities mm-hmm. that she loved once, you know? So I think that's really important. And it's interesting. I just read a book by a woman named Monica Segal. It's called A Kiss in Kashmir. Wonderful book. I couldn't put it down. I knew her when I was a journalist, and she was a food writer. She's written cookbooks, and then she started writing novels, and she's very prolific. And I loved this book. And it was interesting because no calamitous events happen. There's obviously a conflict, obviously a problem that needs to be resolved, as in any book. But generally, the people are happy and nice. And I was like admiring that about it, because it doesn't always have to be like, oh my gosh, life stinks and, you know, woe is me and I'm depressed and I hate my life. Like, there are ways to show relatively happy people who just have some challenges, and how do they deal with it?
How do your characters see their roles in marriage?
That's an interesting question. You know, it's definitely a challenge for Sally and Barry, because this ex-lover shows up
yeah.
and she's tempted and she's mad at her husband because they're not in sync about what to do with their child. And I don't want to ruin any spoilers or anything like yeah. that, but it does strain their marriage, and they have to figure out how to move forward together, whether to move forward together, how to communicate their dissatisfaction. And this is 10 years in. And so, you know, they've been together a long time, and to have that first big, huge hurdle, you know, I'm sure there are little things that have happened before this book happened, but it's interesting to see. And I've actually had readers say that they were challenged by some of Barry's actions and some of Sally's actions. And we've had conversations about it, because I think what I was trying to say in the book is that marriage takes on a lot of different shapes and goes through phases. And, you know, I think people make choices to stay or to go for a lot of reasons. And mm-hmm. it's not as cut and dry as you think it is. And so, you know, I don't want to give things away, so I'm really like sidestepping around, but like, I just think that we can't judge whether somebody stays or somebody goes, because there's like an internal barometer that tells you what's right for you. And yet I do think there's a theme in this book that marriage is sacred, and it's a commitment that you have to renew all the time, which is what I believe. You know, I believe that every day you wake up and you have to choose to be married to this person all over again.
Yeah, absolutely. And my first book, I had this character, this horrible character, Caleb, and he was just a jerk. And the main character moves back to town, and he had a crush on her way back. But he has this really nice wife that we get just a few little glimpses of in the first book. And I started to do a follow-up book with one of the more prominent characters, and I kept going back to that wife going, why is she with him? And more important, why does she stay with him? And that was my Sissy Klein book, my second book. And it was so interesting turning that upside down. And then you start to see they're not all bad. They had good,
right.
but there are reasons people stay in a marriage, and they're very personal.
Yes.
And you can't know those things unless you are in their shoes.
Yes. Yes. It's totally true. And you can't also judge somebody if they leave because you don't really know. You never know what someone's like in a relationship. And so I don't know that there's a one size fits all approach to marriage, but I do think, I mean, this might be quite a big statement, but I do think people are a little quicker to leave than they should be. And so I try to look at that, you know, both in my own life, but in, cause I'm happily remarried. And so hopefully I got it right this time around, but you know, in my characters, like I want marriage to be a choice that is a choice I'll keep making and that it's okay to show, like in Woman of Valor, I mean, it's a little spicy and I wanted to show a marriage that could be passionate after the kids come and when they're religious and, you know, I wanted to show that, like, why not celebrate that? And so, and that was a question actually on my book tour, you know, why did you want to show sex in the Orthodox world? And I'm like, well, everybody has it and they're married and they have children. And so why not show that they have that connection and that's enduring? Because I think that that's something, you know, otherwise you hear the stereotypes like, oh, you're just like roommates or whatever. And I'm like, nope, they can still, you know, have a passionate relationship. And I think that's important.
I mean, it's like, no, they're propagating the species. That's all. That's the extent of their physical relationship. I think that's an important perspective to show. We are a married couple. This is a healthy marriage within this frame.
Yes.
That's really cool. What have you learned about yourself through writing? I could see that there's a lot.
Well, I do think that it's true that a lot of people, myself included, their first novel has more from their own lived experiences than maybe subsequent novels, because like Cave of Secrets, there's really nothing of me in there, you know, like it's, but Woman of Valor, there are similarities to my life in different places. I think I've learned that I have to expect the first draft to be messy, no matter how well I plan it out. No matter how many character sketches I write and really know these characters well, that first draft is messy. And then you have to do your job with revising. And that's a long and enduring job. And you have to be committed to it. I've learned who to get feedback from and who not to. So that's really helpful. And I've also learned to trust myself even more. Now, I've been an entrepreneur for a long time. And so I'm pretty good at business. And I had 8 books published by other publishers. So when it came to Woman of Valor, I surprised myself when I decided to open my own publishing house and publish it myself. Because when I was in journalism school, you did not self-publish. It was totally frowned upon. It's different today. And I really felt like, I mean, I love this process. I love making every decision. I love taking it from an idea to out on the market. And I'm really proud of that. And I think that that was a big surprise too. And also, I'm really good at marketing, but I'm still learning how to market a book. So I think that was a surprise as well.
The marketing of books changes daily.
Every day. Every day. Yes. It's exhausting.
Are you reading anything fun right now?
So I just finished A Kiss in Cashmere, which I loved. And so it's really funny. When I was in California a few weeks ago on book tour, I took a suitcase of books to sell. And I had already, some people had ordered and I shipped them and everything. So I sold out of those, but I came home with the suitcase filled with books that I bought there. I was with my son too. And I've taught my kids, unfortunately, too well that, you know, independent bookstores should be frequented and supported very, very robustly. So I have a stack of books that I want to read. So yeah, I'm deciding between the next couple that I'm going to jump into.
I hear you. I have Watermark books and I go in there and leave. And if I go in with my husband, he just kind of mills around. Next thing I know, he's hauling out 2 bags of books for me.
I blame my dad. He had said to me when I was a kid, we'd go into a bookstore and he'd say, anything you want, books or knowledge, you can never have too much. Mm-hmm. And I'd have a big stack and he'd buy them all. And so I have no self-control in a bookstore. And I've taught my kids the same. And the truth is, I absolutely love that. And I love having stacks of books that I want to read. One of the ones that I did just finish before that novel was a book of short stories called Likes. And I'm forgetting the author's name, but it surprised me because I don't typically like reading short stories. Mm-hmm. I like reading short nonfiction, but I loved it. And it was really interesting to see the progression and development of a story over a shorter period of time than a novel and how she did it. And it's also beautifully designed. That cover is amazing. So I actually sent a picture to the cover designers who are working on the Cave of Secrets cover. And I'm like, maybe not for this book, but for the future, keep this on file. You know, it's just really, really pretty.
I'll have to check that out. Do you remember the first time you wrote something that felt magical?
It's a good question. My mom says I started writing stories and poems at six. I remember, I don't know if I would say magical, but I keep a corduroy covered journal behind my desk that I toted around when I was 9 and 10, wherever we went. And I wrote stories and skits and poems and all that kind of stuff. And I keep it to remind me of who I've always been. And what I think I remember most is making sense of things, processing by writing. So if I wrote a story, it was about, you know, the vacation we were on or the person I had just met or a place. And I remember particularly having that journal with me when my parents took us to New York City when I was 10. And it was like the typical touristy trip. And we went to the Statue of Liberty and I was scared of it because it's really big when you're up close. And I was 10 and my mom's like, you know, let's all hold hands and look up. And it was like this huge face, you know, and I was terrified of this statue. And I remember writing, my sister and brother were in like the hotel pool. It was like cold and whatever. And I'm like writing a story to try to like go through those emotions. So maybe not magical, but processing for sure.
Something that stuck with you.
Yes, yeah. For sure.
Do you have any advice for new writers?
Yes, I think that writing is a practice. And so you just do it. And the more you do it, the easier it becomes. And the stronger your voice and the bigger your confidence. And so much of what I teach in my writing classes, and I have a lot of mostly women at midlife, but some men too, I'm teaching self-belief and confidence. And that surprised me at first, but now I just am used to it. And I think a lot of people will just say, you know, I want to be a writer. And I'm like, let me ask you a question. Do you write? And they're like, yeah, all the time. And I'm like, then you are a writer. That self-belief will take you further than really anything else. I also would say surround yourself with a writing community. So I offer a free monthly write-along on Zoom one Saturday a month, which anybody can sign up for on my website. You know, there's things at libraries and in your community. There's all kinds of online classes, writing retreats. I lead retreats, but there's tons to go on wherever you want to go in the world. And if you do these things, you'll start to meet other people and it fortifies what you're doing. And you may make friends out of it and then you support each other. And that's what it's all about.
To learn more, visit lynngolodner.com. If you're enjoying The Writing Table, please consider leaving us a review. There are so many podcasts out there. Reviews help other listeners find us. Thanks so much for your support.